the opening kickoff. Here are Mark and Lee.
All right, it's 8:05. Welcome in hour number three on this Monday edition. Hope you and yours had a happy and safe Mother's Day weekend. I'm Mark, that's Lee. We're in the studios of WNSP.
Mark, I'm so happy to bring back with this longtime college football coach, now hitting the trail these days, Tommy Tuberville. And Coach, first of all, is everything going well with you and your family during this trying time?
Everybody's good. Thanks, Lee, for asking. It's as we all know, it's been trying time. I hadn't talked to you guys since football season, and it's been an interesting, 5 months since I've talked to you. But I think we're all seeing the light at the end of the tunnel on being able to start a little bit and getting back to a little bit of a normal life. But, man, it has been an upside-down 5-6 months.
Absolutely. And there are questions we want to ask you relative to college football, but we've got to ask you, we had a major press conference in the Mobile area, Baldwin County, the other day. Phillip Rivers was introduced as the coach in waiting for the St. Michael's Catholic School. And during the press conference, you know, he was asked, he left the state to go quarterback North Carolina State. And he said when he was being recruited by Auburn, which would have been while you were there, when he heard the word tight end, that he decided that wasn't what he wanted to do. In fact, he made a comment. He said, if I was a tight end, I would have been coaching long ago rather than quarterbacking in the NFL. Can you kind of bring us up to date on what happened in the recruitment of Phillip Rivers? Was he right on with that?
Oh, yeah. No, he was right on. And, you know, he his dad was a good friend of mine. His dad, Steve, has been a coach all of his life, just like me. And Phillip was a coach's brat and coach's son, and I knew the family real well. He came to all of our camps as, growing up as a young man, and he loved quarterback, and he had a funny throwing motion. But the problem was, and I would go watch them play in games. Actually, I went to one of the state semifinal games or something his senior year, just to try to put all this together, how we're going to offer him. And they never hardly threw the ball much. And so you couldn't tell. You had this big old young man, he was a strapping kid, that pretty good athlete, but, you know, he's very tall, had a good physique. And I sat down with him and his dad after the season. We offered him as a tight end, and pretty much he was going to come, but nobody else was recruiting him that much. And at the end of the day, he got offered by North Carolina State, and I sat down with him and his dad and him, and he really wanted to play quarterback, and I already had Jason Campbell, and I didn't, you know, when you're friends with the family as close as I was, you know, you want to make sure you do the right thing. I didn't want him sitting on the bench or whatever, but he turned out pretty good, I'll tell you. He overcame all odds with his throwing motion, and got a chance to be a Hall of Fame quarterback in the NFL, and I'm proud for him of getting into coaching. You know, he's got 9 kids, so he's got his own football team himself almost with just his family.
Tommy, was he surprised? Was his family surprised when you said the words tight end? Now, that obviously was not something he was expecting, I would assume.
He wanted to be he wanted to come to Auburn, but he wanted to play college football, but he really wanted to play quarterback. And you can't not give him that credit, because, you know, he's competitive. Now, Phillip's a competitive son of a gun. And he kind of reminds me of Peyton Manning. You know, you're going to get everything you get out of Phillip Rivers. He is going to do everything he possibly can to win a game. And you watch him last 15 years in the NFL. I mean, he lays it all on the line every game, of giving the best he's got to have more points than the other team at the end of the day. But I think it's going to be a huge addition to the state of Alabama, and for him getting in the coaching ranks and bringing his past experiences back to the state and understanding, you know, what he can do and help young people.
You know, Tommy, there may be a parallel between him and Ben Roethlisberger, because I remember when Roethlisberger was down here for a bowl game, that he said that I think in college he started out as either a wide receiver or a tight end, before the quarterback position opened up for him. So I guess maybe there have been tendencies where not every kid came into the college ranks as a top-flight quarterback, but maybe grew into that position.
Yeah, you know what? Phillip Rivers was right on the edge of all these 7-on-7 camps. And had we had all those 7-on-7 camps back in his day when he was coming out of school, you'd know more about him in terms of being a quarterback. Now you don't miss a quarterback. You know whether he can throw or can't throw because they throw thousands of passes in the summer and you get to watch him. So, but again, you know, Phillip Rivers and he and his family and, I mean, just great people and what he's done for football, high school and college and NFL and now giving back to high school will be an awesome accomplishment.
Coach, Mark and I had a conversation last week in lieu of what's going on with COVID-19 and conferences, every commissioner, this, that. We don't know what's going to happen. Would college football be better off with what we call a czar, one overall leader, commissioner, whatever title you want? And if so, who would be somebody that could really be, could fit into a position like that?
I don't think, I've always said that. I've always said we need one person to stand up for the game of football, college football, and it trickled down to high school football. And somebody that could stand up and you know, for the rules and the right thing to do, somebody that could really fight. You know, we have one every year. He's the president of the American Football Coach Association. There's 15,000 coaches across the country, high school, college, and pro. I was that one year. Now, the guy that really ran the show was Grant Taft. And Grant Taft did for 20, 25 years. He kind of the behind-the-scenes guy that kept high school and college football on the right track. He would fight like heck for coaches and players. We don't have that much when it comes to commissioners, athletic directors. Heck, most of them are play football and presidents. And so I think commissioners have helped to some degree. But I think you need one person, standout person, that really understands the game, coaches and players and trainers and everybody involved, that could be that one person, not a dictator, but somebody that could really take to the fight, you know, from experience of what's best for the game.
Anybody in mind that you think, if they ever went that route, which doesn't seem likely, but that could really do a great job in that position?
There's a lot of them. Most of them are ex-players, ex-coaches. Again, you got to get somebody that's been in the fight, not somebody that just thinks they know it. I mean, you got to really understand what these kids go through in terms of practice and the off-season, and you really got to stand up for the game. We've got to have somebody stand up for the game. This president we have in the NCAA now, you know, I think they make $3-5 million, the president of the NCAA, and they make a lot of the decisions for what we do. And this guy's name is Mark Emmert, and I like him. You know, he used to be the president of LSU, got to know him pretty good. But at the end of the day, you have to have somebody that has experienced life in the trenches to make sure that we hold the rule of law in terms of what's best for our game. Right now, we're under attack. We've been under attack for 15 years from the concussion standpoint. I was in all those meetings and listened to all those lawyers and doctors that they just, well, close football down and do something else. But we got to fight, and there's going to be a fight on our hands forever now. You know, just fighting for this sport that we all love, and it does so many great things. I mean, I know it's physical sport. I know people get hurt, and it's unfortunate. It is a physical game. But the thing that football brings to young people across this country, just the toughness, the ability to work with other people. You know, 90% of the kids in football never touch the ball in a game. Think about that. Never touch the ball. So you got a job you've got to do to make sure that you have a chance for your team to win. And you might not be part of ever controlling the football. So it is a great, great sport. It's it really exemplifies the, you know, what this country's about.
Everybody wants the sport to come back. We have so many questions, no answers right now. Two things that have cropped up in particular. If and when this college football comes back, your thoughts on fans or no fans in the stands? And also, do you think it would be feasible from some conferences to have some teams start and others not?
You know, we've got to get this country back going again. Number one, safety is something that we've all understand that we've got to have. This is something none of us know anything about. I mean, from top to bottom, even the doctors across the country, this pandemic of the Wuhan virus or whatever you want to call it, is very contagious. But we can't let this virus bring us to our knees, and it's got us right now wondering, you know, what this country is really about. We got to get back to work, but we got to get back to school, and we got to get back to athletics. But we got to find a safe and very prepared way to do it. But we have got to get our kids back in school. You know, education is the key to freedom. And you know, once we do that, I think we'll get football back and intact. We have high school football, college football, NFL. You know, that's another level, and really not concerned about that. But we got to get these kids back involved in sports all over this country, and not just football, but also back in the school learning and becoming better citizens of this country.
Tommy, you put your commissioner hat on or your college football czar hat. What scenario out there at this point, I know we're just speculating, makes the most sense? Do you start on time? Do you start on time without fans, or do you push the season back?
You know, it's right now it's still up in the air since I've been running for this Senate position. And President Trump's endorsed me. I talk to him about once a week, and we've talked about, you know, obviously football. He asked me what I think, and I told him, Mr. President, you know what I think. We got to get back. We got to get back to what we really, not that we enjoy football, but how much it does for us. Now, it's not just the players. It's also coaches and everybody involved. It's also the fans. And we got to get it back. Now, we'll ease into it, I would imagine. If they were making plans today, I would say probably that it would be a little bit of a delayed action in terms of when we started. You don't need that long of preparation time for football teams. 2 weeks is plenty. Now it's going to hurt the younger kids, but just to get back to a normalcy of having a football season, 2 weeks.
He's supposed to announce on Friday. I think within the next week or two, Ian Jackson, who I think is an extremely athletic, gifted linebacker out of Prattville, he'll announce within the next week or two as well. As of now, I would think both of those guys would go to Alabama, will pick Alabama. And they're in on a lot of players around the country. You know, the key, Lee, as you know, is filling needs, and that's really what they're focused on right now.
8:24, welcome back in. That the voice of Rodney Orr of Tider Insider. He joined us earlier today on WNSP.
Mark, time for our Miller Lite Golf Report and John Ricchetti. John, good morning, and I have a story to ask you about. Is that all right?
Go ahead, shoot it.
Yeah, and I don't know whether to believe this or not, but you're our golfing guru. Guy named Anthony Griggs played on the Golf Week Amateur Tour in Arizona recently, won the D-Flight. He had an 84. This is according to a story that was on the internet today. And he turned 61 on May 19th. According to members of his group, he played the entire round with just a putter. A putter for the entire round. No other club he used. And this was a putter that he paid $299 for. He broke his original putter, something called the Scotty Cameron putter, bought an old Wilson staff punter for $299 and played the entire 18 rounds. Is this believable?
I mean, yes, it is believable. The first thing I would say, I had kind of briefed over the story, and I didn't really pay much attention to it. As I breathe, so my take on this would be, I'd have to see what the yardages he played from. If it's the golf course is pretty short, it looks like he was in the senior division D flight. So I would imagine the golf course was set up on the short side. If that's the case, yes. I mean, you can make bogeys and hit, you can hit the putter up. I've goofed around with hitting putter. I've seen guys hit putters 180 yards off a tee at 200 yards. So depending on what tees they played from, is this possible? Yes, I would say it's possible. It'd be rare, but it's not something that you'd be, sitting around a water cooler and going, everybody's saying that was a lie, that's a gimmick, and so forth. But apparently they had some people in his group that verified the situation. So, he shot 84, I think, right?
Yep.
Or 81?
84.
84. Yeah, so I would say, yes, that is definitely doable. Yes, it is doable. It's not an easy task. Now, if he would have said he shot like a 64, I would have said, not happening. But anyway, it's something I'll dig into a little bit more. We'll talk about it more tonight when we're on the air at 6 o'clock live from Felix's Fish Camp. And PJ Tour is supposed to meet today as they sent out memos to their PJ Tour players as we're getting closer and closer to the start of the PJ Tour in June. But they're going to decide on what exactly the protocol will be at the event as far as caddies, players, and so forth. There's some players are saying, they're kind of leery about even if, caddies should be allowed to be out there and so forth. So we're going to wait and see how this all pans out. But we will have this week a clear understanding exactly what the proper protocol will be on the PGA Tour of the first four events. That being said, Jack Nicklaus's tournament, the Memorial, which he hosts in Dublin, Ohio, they're going to have fans, apparently, because that's going to be like the sixth event on the schedule. They're going to have each fan will get a badge. In the badge, they will have an infrared chip, which will be in the bag, where they will be able to monitor where there a bunch of people are, together as far as social distancing. You might have one group, all of a sudden you got, they'll monitor these inside a situation room, I guess, if you want to call it that, and they will be able to see where the majority of all the people are migrating and where they're hanging out, and they'll be able to send somebody out there to say, whoa, 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 we need to spread this whole area up. We got too many people, close together and stuff. So it's kind of a neat thing to go, and that could be the new norm on the PGA Tour moving forward. So a lot to be going on. This is a big week, and we'll see that. And you got the Skins game this weekend on NBC, which Rory and DJ teaming up against Ricky and Matthew Wolf. So that will start on Sunday. And also the Light Scratch Tour will be kicking off next weekend. So looks like golf is hopefully getting back on stage.
We got to run, Johnny. Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
I've lived my childhood dream. I've had two childhood dreams. And one was playing NFL, and I've been able to do that now going on my 17th season and still love that and excited to carry on that dream. And the other is to be a high school football coach as my dad did. So it's an exciting day. I mean, it really is. I'm going, wow, how blessed am I to be able to live both of those out.
All right, it's 8:34. Welcome back in. The opening kickoff continues. Markheim and Lee Shervanian with you.
That was Philip Rivers at his press conference on Friday. The media member who was on top of this story and right from the get-go, in fact, he's the one that tipped me off, Mark, was TV5 sportscaster Randy Patrick. Randy's on the line with me right now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Happy Monday to everybody. It's a beautiful morning.
It is. It always is on the Gulf Coast, is it not? Randy, you were on, like I said, on top of the story right from the get-go. You knew about it months ago. Give me the timeline and how this all evolved, that we have Philip Rivers coming to St. Michael's in maybe a year or two.
Well, I guess, one of the frustrating things as a reporter sometimes is you get a little too deep into a story to where your sources trust you and trust that you will not run out and break the story before the time. And so I think I was kind of caught in one of those situations to where I just had a gut instinct a long time ago that something was special in the works. First and foremost, we know we go back 2 years ago to the summer of, 2018, I guess it was, when Philip Rivers showed up at St. Michael to do a football camp. So that's cool. You know, we have a lot of guys doing football camps, but it's kind of odd that he went to a camp in Fairhope. And never really asked the question then, why is he here? And then came back the next year, which was last summer, did the camp again. And then you started to hear some things like maybe he might be building a home in Fairhope and asking a few people closer to the situation. But just could never, ever really get the meat and potatoes of the story to be able to feel confident enough to break it. And then when you finally do get some information that something might be in the works, you know, you're sworn to secrecy. And so, unfortunately, I guess, and Mark can speak louder than me in this subject of today's world. I mean, sometimes there's liberties and ways to get the story in the story without saying the story, or, you know, put a little, question mark at the end with a statement of, you know, there's going to be a really big event or something like that. But to just come straight out and say, hey, Philip Rivers is going to be the head coach at St. Michael, most people would think you're nuts. In fact, we had a news director in our Nexstar chain in one of the big cities, big markets, respond with basically that. You know, you guys got to be kidding me, right? This is a joke. And so the long and short of it is you know, this thing was in the works for a long time. I'm not quite sure the timeline as to why it happened now, and maybe not next year. I thought when Scott Phelps was, when he resigned recently, I thought, well, that's kind of odd because it just doesn't really work in the time frame of I thought that, you know, Philip Rivers would eventually be named St. Michael's head coach, St. Michael's head coach, but not this soon. And so when the press conference was scheduled and announced, you know, I kind of got word that it was going to be a big event, and it was. And it was a big national story, which I knew it would be. And a coach in waiting is what I pretty much told you last week. I said, well, I'm not comfortable to go on the air and say anything other than, you know, something's going to happen big, and I think it's going to be Philip Rivers, and I think he's going to be a coach in waiting, and whenever he decides to leave the NFL, he's going to take over as head coach, and that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, and when I was watching the trailers over the weekend, I'd be watching ESPN, and then it would say Philip Rivers is going to coach a high school team in Alabama. And then on the internet, all these the NFL sites and other sites, were you a little surprised that nobody caught on to this outside of the Mobile area, the Ian Rappaports of the world or people like that?
Well, I am, and I guess Philip was keeping it close to the vest. But if you really follow the headlines, so you can go back to a great story. I don't know, maybe Mark wrote it back on Philip Rivers during the camp. Might have been, but it was an excellent article on just who the man Philip Rivers is and why he was at the camp, spreading basically his philosophy to these kids of Catholicism and hard work and stuff like that. And then it mentioned, you know, that this place is a great – it was almost a cryptic article, to be honest with you. And going back, and I read that article, you know, when it came out originally and got into detail, I think you could start to, you know, to really put the pieces of the puzzle together to know what was in the works. And that article just, you know, pretty much said it all about you know, how deep his faith is, his family, 9 children, 7 girls, 2 boys. I think he wants to, obviously, as you if you listen to the press conference Friday, he wants to coach his son, you know, his son. And at the time frame now, I think his oldest son is in 6th grade. So, you know, by the time he really gets into it, his son will be, you know, 8th grade. Certainly 9th grade when his dad comes. I can't see his dad doing more than 2 more years in the NFL, but you never know. And I have to tell you, I complimented him when he walked into the room and took the microphone when I asked the first question. I said, good Lord, you look great. You're 16 years in the NFL, and you come walking in here, and you just, the guy just, you know, he's one of those all-American, you know, guys, really.
Randy, it'll be interesting to watch over the next couple years. You know how this works. Some programs don't necessarily recruit, but sometimes they recruit themselves, right? So it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic of that enrollment changes over the next couple years just based on people knowing that he's going to be there and kind of moving into that area and the whole deal?
Absolutely. And if you look at the numbers of St. Michael and you have basically compare them to McGill too, and the numbers of St. Michael are just growing leaps and bounds. And, you know, they're almost going to be to the ceiling to where, you know, if I think I was talking to the principal, he said 350 students is the max. But, you know, just following the Alabama High School Athletic Association's classifications, and you know that McGill dropped down to 6A, losing 200 students. And then, of course, St. Michael moving up to 4A, they gained a couple of hundred students in the last couple of years. So it's a flip-flop that they knew when they put this school on the chessboard 10 years ago that somebody said, you know, they're going to build a Catholic school in Baldwin County one day. I said, yeah, right. And then somebody donated the land out there in a really unique area off of 101. It has really a good potential, I think, for growth around it. They are currently raising money to build a football stadium there on campus that I think already has about $5 million raised. That's the goal. But I would assume the fundraising is going to come. The money's coming in a little bit faster now that Philip's there. And it was also, I hate to say rumor, I'll just say there was a story, and I think it's a valid story, that Philip Rivers has already contributed money to the school. I mean, that's how much he believes in that school already. And I don't know how much time you guys have, but I guess maybe the follow-up question is going to be, so how did it get to Fairhope, right?
Yeah, but it's on the map. It's not hard to find.
Yeah, he just threw a dart. It's a really cool story. I think it's one of those great stories that is going to be told by a number of people eventually. I can only just tell you the short version. When I asked somebody, I said, there's got to be some reason why Philip Rivers is coming to St. Michael. It doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. And the quick version is a family with a large family. I think seven children moved to Fairhope. Big Chargers fans. The wife wanted to get the husband a birthday wish from the great Philip Rivers. Somehow, some way, she was able to get it done. And when Philip called the gentleman, the father of the seven children, Philip got voicemail, as I'm told, and ended up, you know, missing the call to get the happy birthday wish. He in turn called him back. They struck up a relationship, a friendship. And this was in the infancy when St. Michael was being built. And I'm sure there's, you know, obviously many families, several families that were lead, you know, families in getting this thing done over there. So he says to Philip Rivers, I see you got a place over in Destin, Florida. If you ever, you know, want to come over and check out St. Michael and, you know, visit Fairhope and see what it's like, we'd love to, you know, have you. Long and short of it, one day the phone rings and it's Philip Rivers, and he said, we packed the kids up in the car and we're coming over from Destin to Fairhope to check everything out. And that kind of started this relationship that the timeline now has advanced to last Friday's press conference where, you know, he's the man now. And then Paul Knapstein is going to, you know, obviously either coach a year or two, the athletic director, and wait it out. I felt kind of sorry for Paul the other day in the press conference. You know, he was kind of overshadowed here. He was going to take over a football program. I don't think anybody asked him the question.
Yeah. So, Randy Patrick, our guest here on WNSP. I got to ask the hard-hitting questions because I'm a journalist, but you said they packed the car up. And what kind of car does he have with nine kids?
What kind of car?
Yeah, with nine kids.
He parked next to us out in the parking lot, and it was a truck, and it was such an unassuming truck. If he pulled up to you at the red light somewhere in Baldwin County, you would think he would be just maybe coming off his cattle farm. But it has a California tag on it.
Well, he's got to get
somehow,
that changed.
I guess some way they stuff all those kids in there. I don't know.
Hey, we got to go, but quickly, you're returning to the studio tonight?
Yeah, after 7 weeks of home broadcasting in this historical time, it's time to go back. We're doing kind of a slow reentry, so you'll see some of the folks who've been in the streets here in the next couple of weeks back in studio, and hopefully by June or so we'll all get back to normal. And it has been very, very challenging, very stressful, and in those times, sometimes you do your best work. And I think in the last 7 weeks, it's been an amazing ride of new technology and FaceTiming and people having time on their hands, actually, you know, famous people to sit there and want to talk to you instead of chasing them down or whatever, right, and having to meet them somewhere. It's just been a list and a who's who of, you know, mobile-connected people in all walks of life, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball. I interviewed Mitchell Merle, who's an outstanding jockey over in Louisiana. Robbie Shelton from the PGA Tour. And, we are blessed. We really are, as you guys find out each and every morning on WNSP. We are blessed to have just a wonderful collection of awesome athletes and awesome people that are, you know, so friendly. So I'll leave it with that and have a great week. Look forward to seeing you guys again soon.
Thanks, Randy. Really appreciate it. Yeah, what kind of a minibus?
Yeah, I don't know.
Minibus?
I mean, you can't get 11 people in a Suburban.
And how
you
can't
get them in a minivan.
What if you have an appointment and the family's got to be ready to go at a certain time? You know what it reminds me? You remember the Home Alone movies?
Yeah.
Yeah. The,
those extended cabs, maybe?
Well, just the straggling out, and then they missed the kid, you know. Of course, that was movie. But, I mean, you know, getting 9 people ready to go at a given time.
Yeah. Hey, more power to them. In fact, that might be the question I asked. You asked the football question.
Your best question today was when it all said and done and he takes over at St. Michael's, do they move from 4A to 5A with a 9?
Yeah, I mean, they probably quadrupled their enrollment with just bringing Rivers.
That was
the
best
in.
Question of the day.
All right, 847. One final segment here. You guys can jump in at 694-1055. And, of course, we'll continue with your comments in the app. Stay with us right here on the Sports Station, WNSP.
Hi, this is Luis Gonzalez, former South Alabama Jaguar and Major League player. You're listening to WNSP Mobile. Now you don't miss a quarterback. You know whether he can throw or can't throw. Because they throw thousands of passes in the summer, and you get to watch him. So, but again, you know, Philip Rivers and he and his family, and I mean, just great people, and what he's done for football, high school and college and NFL, and now giving back to high school will be an awesome accomplishment.
All right, one final segment. That the voice of Tommy Tuberville. He joined us earlier this hour on WNSP. He confirmed he did recruit Philip Rivers as a tight end and shared that story with us. If you missed that interview or our interviews with any of our folks today, including Paul Knapstein over at St. Michael, Kerry Valerie, who played with Michael Jordan with the Birmingham Barons, Rodney Orr joined us as well, and of course, Randy Patrick. You can go online, WNSP.com, listen to those interviews in their entirety, or be looking for them on Twitter here in the coming hours.
You know, since you brought it up, Mark,
WNSP.
I've changed my opinion on Michael Jordan as far as a baseball player, because you look at the batting average at 200, and, you know, to me, that's not very good, if you want to use the word bust or whatever. But then to realize he started out at AA, which is very, very difficult, because players rise up through the minors, rookie ball, single A, double A, and double A is very, very tough. It's more of a pitcher's league and so forth. And then to look at his stats, 30 stolen bases and also 50 RBIs. And as the manager, Francona, pointed out, very few of his talented players had 50 RBIs. And that, to me, actually, he probably was progressing to a point where, from a publicity standpoint, but even beyond that, that maybe if he had stayed with baseball, he could have reached the majors. Well, I'm sure he would have, because let's face it, who signed him? Jerry Reinsdorf. Jerry Reinsdorf was the owner of the Bulls, so obviously he'd want to capitalize. In fact, something that was not brought out in the documentary, during that baseball season, the White Sox and the Cubs, and this was before the advent of interleague play, they used to have a game in the season, Mark, where they would play. I think it was at Wrigley Field, this particular game, and for this game between the White Sox and Cubs, didn't mean anything as far as standings, 37,000 plus, and they could have sold probably 37,000 more tickets. People wanted to see Michael Jordan at this game. And he actually did pretty well. He went 2-for-5 and drove in a run. And Harry Carey was doing like the play-by-play, and it's on YouTube. I was listening to it over the weekend, and even he was getting pumped up, and he was a Cubs fan. And, of course, Jordan was playing, you know, for the White Sox. So it would have been, I'm saying, very spectacular had he made it to the White Sox as far as what that would have done for attendance, not only for the White Sox, but around the American League at that time. But as you know, because of the baseball strike, which was brought out in the episode 7 yesterday, he decided to go back to basketball and 3 more championships.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it earlier today. I think we both thought that the most fascinating part of him starting in AA was the reason why, because as Jerry Reinsdorf pointed out, they couldn't handle the media at any level below that. So imagine being assigned a certain level of competition, not based on your athletic ability or your ability to play that game, but just because of the media response.
That was the one thing I didn't know about, why he started out at such a high level with no previous baseball experience coming through the ranks. And as you pointed out, and then you saw that first game, the crush, the media crush in Birmingham.
Yeah. You know what the one part of this series that they've never really talked about, but they keep showing the clip of, was him driving off in his red Corvette and that little kid getting out of the car in the middle of the street to get an autograph. I don't even know where that was, but, I mean, the kid couldn't have been more than, what, six, right?
I was worried about that
and,
kid.
And they keep showing that scene as part of the intro or the outro or whatever, but they've never talked about where that was.
I don't want to sit here and rate the eight. I've enjoyed all of them. But many of the so-called internet people are saying episode 7 was the best one so far because it showed his emotions, the crying, I forget the one where Gary Payton was that 7 or I think that was 8, right?
That was eight.
Yeah, but the whole night they were saying that 7 in particular because of his emotional range and so forth was the best. I don't want to rate him because I've enjoyed them all. In fact, I keep watching reruns.
Yeah, I think they finally get to the flu game next week. I've been waiting to see when they get to that game, and we've been talking about it at my house, and it looks like it's going to be a part of. Look, I think they've been, for the most part, really well done. They do a great job of teasing and ending each show, especially that even-numbered show before the following week, and they continue to do so. So, yes, it's been a much welcome distraction from what's going on. I think it would have gotten some publicity even under normal circumstances, but the fact that there is nothing else going on has really heightened everybody's acknowledgement of what a compelling story it is. And you asked off there, would a LeBron James documentary be as compelling? And I think the answer is no. Unless there is a different side of LeBron that we don't know. But I get the sense that there's not. I don't think he's a hard ass at practice on his guys. And I think the fact that Jordan played in an era where guys didn't conspire to play together and they didn't necessarily create their own teams, although you could make the argument that that was really the start of a super team.
But it was unintentional because Pippen came out of a small college. Rodman was brought in as an afterthought.
Yeah.
They weren't really like big time.
Right. I mean,
it wasn't like Wade or Bosch joining LeBron.
Right. And so I think it's different.
How's this, Mark, for a question? Let's say Jordan was playing today, and I'll go back to Kobe Bryant.